Welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza, working on this pre-recorded program very much. Here are some of the stories making news across Sudan and South Sudan this Wednesday, December 1st, 2021. A South Sudanese analyst says the Kiir administration is not serious about the welfare of the country's proposed unified forces.
I find this argument not logical. And it is simply unacceptable. I say this because you don't need guns in order to graduate soldiers from cantonment camps.
And Sudan deploys troops in Darfur to quash intercommunal violence.
The situation is getting difficult. That is why we decided to deploy more troops to the area.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Some policy analysts are criticizing President Salva Kiir's remarks this week that one of the challenges delaying the graduation of the unified forces is the United Nations arms embargo on South Sudan. The analysts say South Sudan's unity government does not need guns to graduate the unified forces. They say what is required is the structural and professional organization of the forces rather than arms. For VOA News, Wake Simon Wudu reports from Juba.
Joke Madut Jok is a South Sudanese policy analyst. He says a lack of guns cannot be considered a stumbling block to graduating the unified forces.
I would simply graduate these forces with sticks and batons, determine the size of the nation's army, make it lean, professional, reflective of the country's diversity, and create an army that is productive. Its corps of engineers revamped and deployed to work on infrastructure projects.
President Salva Kiir told a governor's forum in Juba on Monday that the major stumbling block to the graduation of the unified forces is the UN arms embargo on South Sudan. Jok says he thinks the unified forces can be graduated and deployed with or without the arms embargo.
I find this argument not logical, and it is simply unacceptable. I say this because you don't need guns in order to graduate soldiers from cantonment camps. What we are more interested in is the organizational aspects.
Joker describes linking the arms embargo to the delay in graduating the forces as a stalling tactic on President Kiir's side.
Weapons are not an immediate priority. For God's sakes, we don't even pay them. We don't feed them, and there have been many desertions because of that. Why should guns be the main problem?
Jok says the UN arms embargo affects the image of South Sudan and has standing in the community of nations. He says speeding up the implementation of the security arrangements would be one way for the government to portray its commitment to addressing issues that led to the imposition of the arms embargo. Activist Kenyasen Abdallah, executive director of the Advocates for Human Rights and Democracy, agrees with the joke.
What we're expecting from the government is that they should complain that there is no uniform for them to be graduated. I would recommend the parties to the revitalized peace agreement to spearhead with the graduation of the unified forces as soon as possible so that they can be deployed in war-hit towns in South Sudan to open way for the returnees or the refugees or the internal displaced persons to return to their respectful homes.
Philip Aguirre, a lecturer at the Institute of Peace, Development and Security at the University of Juba, says the parties to the peace deal will not be able to solve the challenges of graduating the unified forces by blaming outside issues.
The parties to the agreement should sit down and seriously negotiate in a good faith to discuss the way forward, because this is our country, all of us, whether we are rebels, we are government, we are parties, This is our country, and we should sit and discuss frankly what is the way forward.
In 2018, the United Nations Security Council imposed an arms embargo on South Sudan's territory, obliging all UN states to prevent any supply of arms and related material, including ammunition, military vehicles, and spare parts to the country. Chapter 2 of the South Sudan 2018 peace deal, which covers security arrangements, has largely remained unimplemented. For VOA News, I'm Waki Simon Wudu in Juba.
Still on military issues, the Joint Defense Board of the South Sudan's transitional government says it is working to address conflict-related sexual violence across the country. Officers from the various parties in the transitional government launched an action plan to guide efforts by the armed forces to prevent and respond to conflict-related sexual violence. For VOA News, Ding Magot reports from Juba.
Following the outbreak of conflict in 2013, the United Nations Security Council accused South Sudan's warring parties of committing grave violations, including killing, using child soldiers, raping women and girls, and interrupting relief operations. General Malak Ayuen is the chairperson of the committee tasked to implement the action plan on sexual violence.
This is actually forced the Commander-in-Chief and the President of the Republic of South Sudan to sign a joint communique with the Security Council and committed that he will work with the concerned parties to prevent and stop violation of the rights of people, especially conflict-related sexual violence.
General Ayuen says President Salva Kiir also issued an order to the armed forces informing them about the Security Council's action and warned them against violating rights of the South Sudanese people. Lieutenant General Julius Tabule, the co-chair of the Joint Committee, says it will hold accountable anyone who engages in gender-based violence.
In the action plan, which is here, there are six pillars which are listed there to provide guidance on these efforts till 2023, December 2023 to be precise. I will particularly single out pillar number 4, which talks about accountability and oversight. And this I'm doing while addressing myself to my colleagues in the armed forces that whatever we do as armed forces, we will be held to account.
Robert Leach from the Joint Monetary and Evaluation Commission, which is overseeing the implementation of the peace deal, says sexual violence is a symptom of the physical and psychological health of the military.
I think this is an excellent document, and it's a model for, I think, for other countries too. It's very simple and straightforward. But since Bentiu, and the way we've come forward, it still exists. You'll all of you be aware in this room the terrible acts of violence that were committed in Western Equatoria over the last months. Terrible things were done. So we still have this way to go. They need to make sure that this action plan is disseminated in a very simple way.
National Health Minister Elizabeth Achway says her ministry has trained police and social workers to deal with sexual violence.
Sometimes the reason why we're focused for the training is because even some police, sometimes they don't have an attitude of dealing with the cases like we're just talking about. And also, this is a very silent issue.
The Joint Defense Board also says the action plan will only succeed if the agreement on resolving the conflict in South Sudan is implemented. For VOA News, I am Ding Magot in Juba.
The government in Sudan's West Darfur state have deployed additional troops in Jebel Moon locality to quell the conflict between pastoralists and farmers. The acting governor of the Darfur region says an investigative committee has been formed and sent to the area to identify the causes of the conflict and bring those who commit crimes to court. The acting governor appeals to humanitarian aid agencies to immediately intervene to help those displaced by the conflict. Michael Atit reports for VOA from Khartoum.
Authorities in West Darfur State say revenge attacks continue between Arab pastoralists and farmers of the Misriya tribe in Jebel Moon locality and surrounding villages. The acting Darfur regional governor, Muhammad Isa Aliyu, is in Al-Fashir town in North Darfur. Speaking to South Sudan in Focus by phone Wednesday, he said nearly 200 joint security forces have been deployed in Jebel Moon to stop the fighting and restore calm and stability in the area. Aliyu says an investigative committee of police, national security operatives, military intelligence, public prosecutors, and traditional leaders from both sides has been formed to find the causes of the conflict. It will aim to identify individuals behind the violence so they can be brought to justice.
The situation is getting difficult. That is why we decided to deploy more troops to the area. The conflicting communities have been exacting revenge on each other since last week. They have taken their positions on the sides of the hill and they keep attacking each other. Therefore, it was necessary to deploy government forces to keep them apart.
An official in West Darfur State's humanitarian department told South Sudan in Focus Tuesday that accessing some villages in Jebel Moon remains a challenge due to continued violence between herders and farmers. Witnesses from the area say at least 26 people were killed, 13 villages burned down, and more than 10,000 people were displaced. But the UN Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs in Sudan says more than 4,300 people have been affected by the clashes. Governor Aliyu says it remains the responsibility of the government to restore security and stability to all communities across Darfur. He describes the humanitarian situation in Jebel Moon as horrific and calls on aid agencies to quickly intervene and improve the situation. He confirms that thousands of families are seeking refuge in eastern Chad and are exposed to bad weather.
There is a need for humanitarian assistance from all of us, including our international humanitarian aid agencies. More than 2,000 families have crossed into neighboring Chad because the distance is not too far from the border.
The Darfur official attributes the rampant killing, insecurity, and communal conflicts in the region to policies adopted by the administration of ousted President Omar al-Bashir, who divided communities along ethnic lines. He says there is a need to restore social peace and reconciliation among communities in the area through reactivation of the customary and traditional laws in resolving conflicts.
They try to favor some tribes over others and divide them on ethnicity and region. But for years, they have been living together as pastoralists and farmers, and they treat each other with respect.
Aliyu said the government in Darfur is committed to carrying out a disarmament exercise as part of restoring stability and maintaining law and order. For VOA News, I'm Michael Atit in Khartoum.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. Coming up, young men burn a church in Warrap State. Find out why after this break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
how do you break bad news?
I break bad news looking at the person's mood as at that moment, whether to tell the person or not. And if you are telling the person, how would the person take it at that moment you are telling the person?
I think when you need to talk about something difficult, you just need to come right out and do it. So if it's bad news, I think just go right ahead and let it be known and say what you have to say and just figure out how to get over it.
Break bad news to people in a gradual process, because most of the times bad news come as a form of a shock to people. So you break it in a form of a gradual process by saying it in parables or using illustrations.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. Senior clergy with the Seventh-day Adventist Church in South Sudan are condemning the actions of young men who set an Adventist church on fire in Warrap State. Pastor Daniel Maraj says a group of young men dressed in military and police uniforms stormed the church during a worship service and set the building on fire over the weekend in Tonj North County. For VOA News, Dengai Deng reports from Bor.
Pastor Daniel Maraj, the Director of Communication and Public Relations at the Greater Bahr al-Ghazal Field Office of the Seventh-day Adventist Church, says a group of young men burnt books, including Bibles and furniture, during the attack.
The church is burned. Members were scattered from that site. But up to now, we are waiting a genuine report from the district leader.
Pastor Maraj says the weekend's attack is the fifth against the Seventh-day Adventist Church in Waraf State since 2018. Maraj says the attack infringes on the freedom of worship enshrined in South Sudan's constitution.
That is the role of the government to educate our community leaders so that they cannot carry a law in their hands. And also we need to go to them to educate them so that they can know the charge is coming with education. The charge is coming with the hospital. The charge is coming with the schools. The charge is coming with the organizations. Like now, the ABRA is working in those areas. It's working in Warab. It's working in Tonjis. It's working in Tonjisos. It's working in Twitch, providing the health, providing the education, building the schools, giving incentive to the teachers and to their daughters who are in school. So this is an initiative of the church, which they did not understand.
Ayi Agiu Kwal, the paramount chief of Awul Payam, says although the attackers wore police uniforms, the local leadership was not involved in the attack. He says, however, he has been talking to the church leaders in the area about their teachings as they were creating chaos in the community.
The relationship between community and the Seventh-day Adventist Church is bad. The relations are bad because they have a bad system. They can come to your family and convert the children and the woman without consulting you as the head of the family. Then you later get surprised that the wife has stopped some of her normal activities and refuses to cook certain meats, such as meat from dead cattle, and stop producing alcohol. So those and many other teachings have caused problems in the families. So I went and talked to them, but they didn't listen.
Ring Deng Ading is the Minister of Information in Waraf State. He says the state authorities are aware of the attack on the church in Awul Payam.
We condemn this. The measures will be taken against those who have done this. Because it is not right in the law that you can ban a church. And we know that God is the only creator. Whether the church is small or big or any denomination, who have planned the church, so we have to honor.
Minister Ading says members and the leadership of the Seventh-day Adventist Church in South Sudan should continue with their church activities.
I want to tell them that we have condemned as the government and stay calm and the government will investigate that.
The Seventh-day Adventist faith is a minority in South Sudan, where about half the population attends Roman Catholic or Anglican churches. For VOA News, I am Dengai Deng in Bor.
The head of South Sudan's HIV and AIDS Commission says up to 71% of South Sudanese have yet to test their HIV status because of the stigma linked to the virus and the shortage of health facilities. For VOA News on World AIDS Day, Winnie Chirino files this report from Juba.
Esterina Novello Nyulok, chairperson of South Sudan's HIV and AIDS Commission, says only a small fraction of South Sudan's population know their HIV/AIDS status.
The prevalence of HIV is coming down. Is half of 2020, the prevalence is 2.3. among the adult population. And out of that, the total number of people living with HIV in this country are 180,000. Unfortunately, those who tested came out and tested and know their status, only 29% of this total number. So it means the majority, 71%, they are there. They don't know their status, whether they have tested or not, but they have not come to us. We don't have them in our data. So we assume those are not tested.
Nyilak says the percentage of South Sudanese who do not know their HIV status is high because so many people live in rural areas and are not easily reached. She says language barrier also hinder people from getting good information about HIV/AIDS. Nyilak says fear of humiliation also plays a key role in people deciding not to test.
Because of the issues of stigma and the issues of poverty, some people might not be able to reach the hospital. When you looked at also the distribution of health facilities in this country, they are not equal. Some states or some counties might have more health facilities than others. So lacking of the facility, you won't expect a person to go for testing. So that's why we as the government, it's very important to make sure that there is equality, equal distribution of services to all people of South Sudan.
Nyilak says of those who have tested positive, only 23% are receiving appropriate medication. She says HIV treatment for children also is lagging behind, with only 14% of those living with HIV on treatment. She says that requires serious government intervention. She calls on the government to support her commission to provide HIV/AIDS services across the country. Emmanuel Odong, a public health official who previously worked with the AIDS Commission in Eastern Equatorial State, says most states do not have antiretroviral therapy available for patients. He says health officials test people once in a while on days like the World AIDS Day and disappear, then return after a long time, which he says has made it difficult for people to get tested.
When you go for testing like you are positive, you need very good counseling because it really traumatizes your mind. You need a good counseling service or a good counselor to work on you. Tell you like this is not the end of the world, encourage you and all that. Then when you go to the family, you need also to be encouraged by the family members. You have to be treated like any other normal human being. But the people actually are taking it as different. Once they know, people are going to run from her. And that is why most of the people in South Sudan have refused to go for testing. They say, it's better, let me just be like this. When I die, I die. That's it.
Nyilak says the HIV/AIDS Commission is trying to mobilize more resources to improve the HIV services in the country, despite the fact that most donors have shifted their attention to COVID-19 instead. For VOA News, I am Winnie Sirino in Juba.
A famous South Sudanese writer who teaches at the University of Juba says freedom of speech is considered a crime in South Sudan. Professor Taban Loliong says many people in South Sudan are too afraid to express their views on the affairs of the country. He says fear of the authorities has silenced many critics who have solutions to the problems facing South Sudanese. Loliong was suspended from the University of Juba in February last year for expressing his views on the number of states in South Sudan.
I'm happy that the call I made for South Sudan, which was created with 10 states, and it is in our constitution, when they started to move up, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, it reached 20. And then they started 21, 22, it reached 30. When it reached 32, I said, no, we started off with 10, and we must return to 10. That is the only thing we can do in order to justify our being nationalists who have lawyers and who have people with minds. You just don't go on doing things of that nature. And I said, to hell with the life if it has to come to that. So I did it. What did I lose as a result? I lost 3 months' salary that I was polluting the minds of students, or that I was instigating children, students, one group against another. But people have been fighting with that Taban instigating them. Whatever I talked about was to say, let us return to the 10-state constitution, which we had there at independence. That was what I was after.
What did the university authorities tell you when you were suspended?
No, but they said, no, I was polluting the minds of students or whatever it is, I don't know. But I still think that We have people who went to America, Oxford, and anywhere to get law degrees. And then how can they not even see that this is the area? This is not the area for Taban Lulyong, the literature man. This is the area for the lawyers. But the lawyers only care about cows, cows, cows. So it was a shame for my country that I had to be the one to speak about the laws of the country.
After you finished your 3 months suspension, has anything changed in the country?
Some states still don't have their own state constitutions, and you just wonder, what is it we want? What is it we want? I'm glad that the journalists are pulling their weight. They are doing their level best in the midst of problems. And so I still wish they, because they are called the fifth estate. The fifth estate is there because there are already 4 estates, and this estate is the one which criticizes the country when the country is going wrong, and they don't want the journalists to speak. Why not?
Professor Lulyong, what is your take on the COVID protocols in South Sudan?
You refuse to take tests. Don't go to another person's country because they are going to block you as entering, taking corona there into their own country. And they are right. They are protecting their own people. If you don't care about your own people, that's your problem. But don't represent us in South Sudan here with corona.
How do you feel about the conditions of people in South Sudan as far as the rule of law is concerned?
Even if your people don't criticize you, your people don't stand up against you, don't think that nobody is seeing. It is not me talking to you in secret. That is to be feared. It is just that you are doing the wrong thing in the open, and people are seeing it. And some of them are just ashamed of talking about it, ashamed of seeing it, and so on and so forth. And we do have people who know, who get ashamed of some of the antics, some of the things you want to do, which you think the world should forgive you for. No, that is wrong.
That's Professor Taban Lulyong, a senior lecturer at the College of Education at the University of Juba. He spoke with me from the South Sudan capital, Juba, last week. That's all we prepared for you this Wednesday. We now leave you with Brenda Fassi and the song Vulindela, which literally means open the way. Listening to Brenda Fassi and the song Vulindela. I'm John Tanza. Thanks for being part of our evening. Remember to always wash your hands with soap, practice social distancing, and wear a mask when you're in public places. To protect you and others from getting COVID-19, do not escape from COVID-19 quarantine centers because there's no cure for coronavirus. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.